Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos. Hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee, karup, guten tag, jow, weevi, va, cat, bang, half a day, jai, janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection, prison, killitary industrial corporation in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA. Home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I know there are people in the audience who can recite the opening better than I can at this point. Yeah. So, anyway. It seemed this week, wherever I turned, there was this meat industry appointed, pig farmer led, acceptable cruelty to animals, for animals, animal advocacy movement, really wherever I turned. And I thought I should just do my job and be divisive and derisive, not really feeling a part of the farm animal rights movement, sanctuary for mercy for humane over killing, whatever. All of these groups now meld into one. I can't tell the difference. I can't tell animal killers from animal advocates. It seemed like that group was out there, that, you know, the farm animal rights movement sanctuary for mercy for humane overkilling. I just can't relate. I'm sorry. Call it divisive because that's what I want to be. I want to be divided from that. I know I was supposed to, you know, be laughing it up with Gene Bauer visiting Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. I know I was supposed to be laughing about bacon bits. I almost found it funny, if it were not so sad, that Gene Bauer was selling us on meatless Mondays, even to this day on that show. How can he not know that meatless Mondays have been the greatest aid to the egg industry since the partnerships of the animal rights movement with the egg industry, with United Egg Producers, all of those folks, HSUS and Farm Sanctuary, Farm and Mercy for Animals, and all of them, Compassion Over Killing, In Defense of Animals, all partnering with United Egg Producers. So, I don't know, I guess maybe the egg industry people might have been watching The Daily Show and laughing it up and, you know, giving the elbow to the guy next to him and saying, hey, there's our guy, there's Gene Bauer, who gave his support to enriched cages, to modified furnished cages, which his organization, Farm Sanctuary, used to oppose. Farm Sanctuary had a web page opposing these cruel, horrible battery cages. But they have a nice name, right? Enriched cages. So that makes them nice because they have a nice name. And I don't know what changed, but Farm Sanctuary now supports them. They've become the humane standard. HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, had a webpage against these enriched, furnished, modified cages, saying they were too physiologically and psychologically damaging to birds, so they were unacceptable until the partnership with the egg industry, and suddenly all of these groups are campaigning for them as the humane standard, and now they are accepted as the humane standard in proposition to California. So I don't get it. So here are the experts at animal betrayal all over the media. Gene there laughing it up with John Stewart, you know, and with the bacon bits. And this dude on Facebook says, "Oh, I'm so glad Gene was on the Daily Show and not you." Yeah, because they would have gotten a different bacon bit. For me, all right, you know, it would have been my my diarrhea-fed bacon bit, since, you know, grass-fed beef is now all the rage, touted by HSUS, and apparently it's groupie group of groups, and you know, my bacon bit, well, you know, the bacon bit is how hilarious it is that the Humane Society of the United States is led by a pig farmer. Wow, that's a bacon bit in itself, and that pig farmer Joe Maxwell, of course, has to feed all of his pigs diarrhea so they don't get the diarrhea virus going around that's killing tens of millions of pigs. That's the way they treat the pigs. So if you like bacon, you're eating diarrhea-fed bacon. Hey, all right, then that same. Joe Maxwell, the pig farmer vice president of HSUS, this week I see was invited to speak at a Sierra Club conference on sustainability, which, does any of this make any sense? Pig farmers who waste resources speaking at the Sierra Club. Well, of course, the Sierra Club is rancher-influenced, rancher-money-influenced, as is the Humane Society of the United States, which apparently paid a lot of money to the Sierra Club to be involved with that conference. So it's rancher money for everyone, except for Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. So, but there is a donate button at goveganradio.com where you can make a tax-deductible donation, because we're just not getting the rancher money we were hoping. You know, that's getting spread around among all of these groups. While Will Potter was on Democracy Now, and here's a guy who says, you shouldn't criticize HSUS because then you are the animal abuser's best asset. So we get this pro-censorship comment from a guy who's supposed to be, you know, the green is the new red, and, you know, supposed to be revealing truths to us. And he's saying, shh, don't criticize the Humane Society of the United States, because then you're the animal abuser's best asset. Well, Will Potter, like, what credibility does he have on any news story if he can't even tell that HSUS is the animal abuser, right? It's the animal abuser's best asset, because it's the animal abuser masquerading as an animal advocate. HSUS hires animal abusers like Joe Maxwell, the pig farmer. He kills 50,000 pigs a year, and he gets a higher profit because he can call them humane murder victims. So, don't criticize the Humane Society of the United States, even though it's the meat industry, and it's the leading propagandist apologist for the meat industry, or meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. Go to the Farmer Outreach page on Facebook for the Humane Society of the United States. It's all about the meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. It's, you know, the vice president of farm animal protection of HSUS. Now, there's a job. There's an impossible job. And Paul Shapiro is doing an impossible job protecting farm animals as vice president at HSUS, because he can't even protect farm animals from his co-worker, the vice president of killing pigs, Joe Maxwell. And then there's it comes full circle with Paul Shapiro, the vice president of farm animal protection of a meat industry corporation, saying, "Hey, did you see my friend Gene Bauer on Comedy Central? He did a great job." So, wow, with friends like these, the animals need a different animal rights movement, a vegan movement. Is that why we had the World Vegan Summit and Expo? Okay, and then Gene Bauer is on Comedy Central selling us Meatless Mondays once again, which have led to record egg sales, the highest egg sales in 30 years, so says the president of the American Egg Board. And that same president of the American Egg Board tells us that HSUS actually provides cage-free eggs to clients. Whenever HSUS has a client who wants cage-free eggs, HSUS approaches him and the American Egg Board, and they provide those cage-free eggs to the clients of HXU Eggs, and which was partners with United Egg Producers, as I mentioned, which was partners with Animal, with Farm Sanctuary, again, all of these groups suddenly supporting enriched battery cages. Could you please ask them what changed? They're not talking to me anymore. But if you could get a hold of Gene Bauer or Nathan Runkel or Paul Shapiro or Joe Maxwell or Alex Hirschaft, please ask, what happened? You used to oppose these cages, these concentration camp battery cages, before you campaigned for them. What changed? Please ask them, okay? I don't know what changed, but now Mercy for Animals has Nestle, you know, saying Nestle is great for animals because it's adopting these furnished, modified, enriched cages. And Nestle is promising that animals will be free from fear and terror and physical hurt. This is all made up nonsense. I don't get it. And then all of these people are put center stage by AR Con, that ridiculous animal rights conference with organizer Farm, the Farm Animal Rights Movement, who's saying, "Can we play too? Let us play too. We have Meat Out, where we ask people to skip." I'll talk about Farm a little more after the break, and its new campaign. You know, in addition to Meat Out, oh please, people, have three meals without meat a year, huh? Which is worse than Meatless Mondays. Anyway, Charlotte Cressy's coming up. She was a speaker at the World Vegan Summit and Expo on ecofeminism and veganism. Gary Francione next hour on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and there are two extraneous Bob Linden pages that are normally maxed out but open up occasionally for a special person like you to befriend me. I need all the friends I can get in this strange movement because, well, it looks like the farm animal rights movement wants to befriend someone, not me. Seems to want to befriend Ben and Jerry's. Can you believe this? So here we are, the world on the verge of collapse from climate change and drought-stricken California in need of a vegan movement. The billions of animals who are tortured and killed who need a vegan movement. And, you know, just health issues, heart disease, cancer, all rampant, needing a vegan movement. And Gene Bauer goes on Comedy Central and says, hey, Meatless Mondays are, hey, they're all right, you know. So no sense of urgency about anything, Tuesday through Sunday, of course. And as we now know, Meatless Mondays have been translated by the American public into the thinking that, oh, meatless means I'll just have eggs and dairy. So egg sales have gone through the roof. I guess that would be the only way that the chickens will ever see sunlight, is the sales went through the roof and the sun came pouring in. But not where the chickens are imprisoned in the enriched, modified, furnished battery cages. So, we get Meatless Mondays. That's still the thing from, you know, Farm Sanctuary. Eat less meat. Ridiculous, a ridiculous proposal. You have Meat Out from Farm, which is one day a year. Have three meals without meat. So I guess people had cheese omelets, breakfast, lunch, and dinner that day. And Farm will sell out. Well, it already sold out. Farm will send out its Meatless Monday recipe tomorrow again and continue when all of these groups should stop that. But now, with all of this going on, Farm decides its new campaign, you know, to save the world. What could be more important than in 2015? Then Farm says, please ask Ben and Jerry's to carry a vegan line of ice cream. Please have a vegan flavor so we can go there and be Ben and Jerry's customers too. So, well, I don't get this. Farm doesn't want to befriend me in the vegan movement, a pure vegan movement. No, Farm wants to be friends and become customers of one of the planet's biggest serial rapists and baby kidnappers and killers of animals, a child-endangering, planet-destroying company that profits from misery. And Farm is saying, please have a vegan flavor. So I guess Farm has set the bar low on, you know, it sees that all of these other groups have their victories, right? They get a victory and then donations pour in. So Farm is hoping, Ben and Jerry, please offer a soy vanilla, and then you can become the heroes of the animal rights movement, and Farm can claim a victory, and people will send in lots of money so that Farm can continue such ambitious and meaningful campaigns as to get a vegan flavor, one vegan. Can we have one vegan ice cream cone, please, at Ben and Jerry's, so we don't have to go to a store and patronize a vegan company that puts out really good vegan ice cream, 100% vegan companies who do that? No, we don't want to do that. Or go to a vegan restaurant that might have vegan ice cream. No, we don't want to give them our money. We want to give our money to Ben and Jerry's. And, you know, is that an ice cream cone's chance in hell that Ben and Jerry's will add a vegan flavor? Well, if it seems profitable, sure, then the vegans can go with their dairy eating friends to Ben and Jerry's and fatten up Ben and Jerry's bottom line. Doesn't really make sense. We need to go vegan. World Watch climate specialists tell us by 2017 or 2020, or we face dire circumstances. Submersion. We're not going to be saved by a new Ben and Jerry's flavor. Sorry, Farm. What a movement, huh? Okay, we'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linton. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. And by the way, I get to talking and I run out of time in the beginning of the show, and I keep wanting to get to the website, chompingclimatechange.org, and it was also attacking the less meat campaign that animal advocates have embraced, and in fact it has a page posted there at chompingclimatechange.org. The headline is "Down with Less Meat, Up with Happy, Better Vegan Foods." And chompingclimatechange.org is a very credible climate change website that takes into account a lot of the great work from the climate specialists at the World Bank, World Watch Institute. So one of these days we will get to that. I want to thank Nature's Flavors for its support of this program and the World Vegan Summit and Expo. If you were there at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, you might have tried Nature's Flavors Birdie and Bill's sodas, now organic sugar-free soda, like the Bananas Foster soda. Banana soda sounds good, huh? You should check out the website, naturesflavors.com. You'll be amazed. Thousands of food items that will help you in the kitchen, whether you're a professional chef or, you know, just want to look like one. And then just check out the thousands of items. You know, like, there's banana-flavored coffee beans, shade-grown, micro-roasted. Banana-flavored coffee beans? Well, yeah. Also, Bavarian cream-flavored coffee beans and black cherry-flavored coffee beans. I mean, just thousands of items. Check it out. And you can have shipping right from the website. So go to naturesflavors.com. Every item is vegan, kosher, and you will be amazed. One of the largest selections also of essential oils, organic essential oils and flavorings. You know, so you want a little flavor in your water, you can get your flavors from Nature's Flavors. And again, thanks to Nature's Flavors for its support of the radio program and the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And our next guest was a speaker at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, Charlotte Cressy, who is an animal liberation activist, educator, ecofeminist, and creator of Earth Energy Yoga. And her talk was related to abolition and liberation from an ecofeminist perspective. And I think sometime this week, I'm hoping, you know, we're a grassroots nonprofit, so we work with the help of volunteers, and I'm hoping many of the talks from the summit will be on the Go Vegan Radio YouTube channel this week. It's going a little slower than it's going at our normal pace, slower than we expected, and Charlotte's talk will be there. And welcome, Charlotte. How are you today?
Thank you, Bob. I'm fabulous. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Well, tell us about your impression of the World Vegan Summit and Expo. How was it for you? What was your experience?
It was amazing. It was inspiring. There were lots of great speakers. I felt like there was a diversity of experiences represented. Like you mentioned a moment ago, great food, very empowering concepts, really knowledgeable people. And yeah, most of all, just a lot of love and a lot of support. It's great to connect with other like-minded people. And it just felt like it was really celebratory and kind of helped us all to recharge our batteries so we can go out there in the world and continue on spreading the message of love.
Mm-hmm. And you do that. You gave a great talk there. And tell people a bit about what you were saying there. Your views on abolition and liberation from an ecofeminist perspective. What does that mean? Give us a little background on that.
Okay, sure. Yeah, well, there's a lot to it. So, like Bob was saying...
Then give us a lot of background on it.
Pardon?
Then I said, then give us a lot of background on it if there's a lot to it. Sure.
Okay, let's do it. So basically, what I was talking about was, well, first of all, how I got into these ideas is that I've been concerned about animals since I was a little girl, and I've always wanted to understand how people can inflict violence on our friends, the animals, and then at the same time, you know, have certain animals that we prize, like pets, and that we're really loving and kind to, and then turn a blind eye to the violence. So I've always been really interested in understanding how we can conduct this type of madness. And I have found some of the reasons why. And so I'm really interested in getting down to the root issues that cause violence against animals. And it really has to do with the way that we're trained to relate to ourselves, to our bodies, to our own thoughts, the way that we're trained to relate to other people. And this is called the dominator paradigm. The dominator paradigm is a coined term by Rhian Eisler, and it means that we're raised to believe that the world is tough, you've got to fight to get by, that we are cruel by nature. You know, it's this Darwinian idea of survival of the fittest, that you have to, those who would survive would actually be the meanest, right? Survival of the meanest. But really, if you look at his theories, it has to do, survival and thriving really has to do with cooperation. It's cooperation, it's care, it's harmony, it's working together with others that is true power. So I'm interested in understanding the ideas that create the harm against animals and women and other oppressed groups of people. And then what are the antidotes to that? So I think the antidote to the dominator paradigm and to the might makes right mentality is embodied love. And so embodied love is just basically the golden rule, and it's in every cell of our being. Most of us don't want to hurt others. Most of us naturally, when we see, for example, when we see someone else get hurt, if you're right there with an animal and you see her or him in pain, your initial reaction, if the kindness hasn't been beaten out of you too much, the initial reaction is actually to go and help that animal. Or if it's a human animal, when you see someone else in pain, you feel pain too. And this is verified through science with mirror neurons. We know that the neurons in our brain fire up. When we see someone else hurting, we hurt too. So it kind of relates back to the all the spiritual traditions having to do with karma and treat others how you want to be treated, because we not only do others benefit when we treat others how we wish to be treated, but we as a human family and we as a family of beings, all the animals, and of course the plants too, everyone benefits when we live from a place of embodied love. And so how this relates to ecofeminism and the yoga and meditation that I teach is, I want to help people to clear out the mental constructs and clutter that perpetuates the might makes right mentality, that causes people to continue eating animals, continue making excuses for their less evolved behaviors. And I think it really has to do with getting back in touch with the body, because the body is good. Our instincts are good. There's this idea that the body is a storehouse of dangerous desires, and that all comes from the dominator paradigm ideas. Dominator paradigm also has to do with patriarchy. So dominator is just another way of describing the patriarchal paradigm. And so basically, within patriarchy, humans are constructed as the opposite of animals. So male is seen as human, and then animal, female, emotion, all those things are on the other side of the duality. And so we as humans define ourselves as not animal and pride ourselves in being not animals. And part of that is to denigrate the body, and we have all kinds of religious traditions built around transcending the body and the idea that the pleasures and desires of the body are evil. But really, this is keeping humanity out of our true power. And I feel like we don't even know our full potential as humans because we've been eating animals for the past 2,000 years. And I don't know that that's the way it always has been. I definitely don't believe that's the way it always has to be. And I thank you, Bob, and everyone else on who's listening in, who's creating this new paradigm, because I really do think that we're on the verge of a major shift, and it has to do with getting people back in touch with their bodies, back in touch with the wisdom, the kindness, and the love that's always there.
Mm. And do you find in, if there is an eco-feminist community, are most of the eco-feminists vegan?
No, they're not. I think we all have our blinders on. We're all, you know, the tyranny of eating animals is pretty powerful. And the conditioning of the mind that occurs is one of the most foundational beliefs. You know, a lot of the times we might be very intellectual and think of ourselves as being so so mature and so spiritually evolved, but it's really, I often see what I would call a sham maturity in a lot of people who are very high-level thinkers. They're not really questioning their underlying beliefs. So there's a lot of people, what I've seen in the eco-feminist world, and this isn't to put them down because we all have our blinders in some areas, I know I do, but this is just to explain kind of where I think they're coming from, is that they can see the links between oppression of women and animals and denigration and destruction of nature. They can see that, but then they can still say, well, you know what, there's a kinder way to use animals. We can use permaculture, and there's ways that we can use goats to mow the lawn, and it's
going to
save, you know.
Hold on a second, Charlotte. We need to take a break, but we'll continue our discussion with Charlotte Cressy. What's your website, Charlotte?
Challenging their beliefs.
Charlotte. Okay, I guess she's not hearing me, but we will continue with Charlotte after the break on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linton at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and Bob Linden and Bob Linden, two other extraneous Facebook pages, because I'm beside myself. We're talking to Charlotte Cressy, who was a speaker at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and she's the creator of Earth Energy Yoga, and gave a talk, which will make it to the Go Vegan Radio YouTube channel sometime in the near future, related to abolition and liberation, that is related to animal liberation and abolition of the use of animals from an eco-feminist perspective. And before the break, Charlotte, we were saying that, you know, you've come to know many eco-feminists, and not everyone's vegan. We have our blinders on. Even people who seem to be progressive thinkers aren't quite there, and it's hard for me to understand sometimes, especially from a feminist point of view, because of the exploitation of the female that should be obvious for eggs and milk, and I'm sorry to say, rape with every drop of dairy, well, with every slice of animal flesh too. So
right.
Yeah. So
yeah, all animal products require exploitation of female reproductive systems. I know I don't want someone touching my breast and taking my milk, and I don't wish that upon any no female deserves to be violated like that, nor does any animal deserve to have that, you know, bodily violation. And it's not just the female animals, but the male animals too, who are raped. And yeah, I definitely agree with you. Feminists should definitely be vegan. They should see the connections, and that women and animals are both seen as objects for the pleasure of others, in particular men. Women and animals are both seen as consumable objects. Women are consumed visually. Animals are consumed literally. So it's definitely connected, and it's related. And so, yeah, I think that feminists should be vegan, and vegans should be feminists, because feminism simply means that you believe in liberation of all genders, of all people. It means that you want freedom for everyone. And men can be feminists, too.
Mm-hmm. What does eco-feminist mean? What's the eco part add to it? Did I lose you?
Do you want me to continue on more about these ideas?
Oh, no, no. I was saying, what, you know, so, hi, can you hear me, Charlotte?
Oh, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, but do you not hear me? Did I lose you?
Bob, are you on the air still? Are we still on the
yeah.
air?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I will just continue on with what I was saying. Basically, yeah, in the eco-feminist and the feminist world, I have seen an unwillingness to recognize the interconnections between the use of animals and women. And there's kind of this idea that, well, we can use animals in a more humane way, and some people don't realize that all use equals abuse. And if I were to tell you, I know someone who looks like he would taste really good, do you want to go sneak up on him when he's sleeping and kill him tonight? You would say, no way. Yet we do that to animals. And why is that? Why does my story sound crazy to you? Because I said someone. And in your mind, someone might mean a human someone. But when that animal, when that someone is an animal, we look at it very differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, do you hear me now, Charlotte?
I do hear you.
Okay, because we both were unable to hear each other, but we heard each other. I was going to ask also, what does the eco add to feminists? Like you said, we should all be feminists, but what is an eco-feminist? What does that add to it,
okay,
eco?
An eco-feminist means that you see the connection between the oppression of women, nature, and animals. And it kind of looks at patriarchy or the dominator paradigm in a way. It's a theory, in my opinion,
I'm sorry, Charlie, we have to take another break, but we will continue our discussion and hear each other as we continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, and also programs are archived there. There are hundreds of programs, as we've been broadcasting now for, 14 years? So GoVeganRadio.com, and while you're there, you can click Donate and support the program with a tax-deductible donation. We're talking today to Charlotte Craig. She is an animal liberation activist and educator, creator of Earth Energy Yoga. She was a speaker at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and she is an eco-feminist. And before the break, I'm sorry, Charlotte, my time management is just out of control today, but we were talking about eco-feminism. What is the difference between feminism and eco-feminism? What does the word eco add into the equation when one is an eco-feminist?
Sure, absolutely. Before I do that, I just want to second what you just said, Bob, about people listening to your awesome archives and donating and supporting your important work, because you are unique, you're one of a kind, and there are not any other people doing what you're doing, and I really appreciate you sharing this liberatory message with people. And the World Vegan Summit was awesome, so I want to encourage people to support your work.
Thank you so much, Charlotte. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. So, ecofeminism and feminism. Basically, ecofeminism just takes feminism a step further, which is that it's the same theories of feminism, but it's including nature and animals. And all of these ideas, veganism, feminism, they're all about looking at relationships. And so ecofeminism looks at the way that we relate to nature and sees how the way that we as humans relate to the natural world, to animals, to women, how those are problematic, and how that women, animals, nature, emotion, the body are all constructed as the other, and as they're all kind of demonized and vilified, and then male, human, logic, rationality, culture, as opposed to nature. All those things are seen as good and valorized, control instead of cooperation. And so it's really about looking at the ways that our ideas about the world are constructed. And ecofeminism sees how we will not create equality, we will not create liberation for women if we don't address the way that we look at nature as something to be used and abused, the way that we look at animals as a commodity, as something to be used and profited from. So it's really an inclusive philosophy, and any type of philosophy or theory like that necessitates action. So to me, ecofeminism is theory and action. It's about putting those principles into action with our everyday beliefs, I mean, with our everyday behaviors, which to me means absolutely being vegan, talking about veganism, and yeah, I think there are a lot of ecofeminists, amazing ones like Carol Adams, Marty Keel, who've written on this, yet there are still some ecofeminists who think that there's a way to use animals, and so they're obviously suffering from, you know, some blinders and some, I guess, conditioning of the meat.
Right, that's progressive thinkers.
What's one of your terms? You have the most creative ideas.
With the you know, a lot of progressive thinkers, to them, still animal oppression is still. Oh, you can't hear me again? Really? Can you hear me now?
I'm sorry, Bob. It looks like we're having audio problems.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Charlotte, I wanted you to talk a bit about yoga, the connection of veganism and yoga. I wonder if John can pass it on to you from the studio. Maybe John can... Can you hear Charlotte? She's gone, so we should call her back. Should we try that and see if it connects? Yes, John. Okay. So, while we try to get Charlotte back, and apologize for the technical problems, I do want to thank Selectee for its support of this radio program and the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And, after water, tea is the most widely consumed beverage in the world, and a wonderful assortment of organic teas available, certified organic, vegan, kosher, gluten-free teas, 100% natural from Select Tea. You can go to selecttea.com, selectteea.com. www.tdrinking.com, and check it out. Tea drinking has recently proven to be associated with cell-mediated immune function of the human body, and tea plays an important role improving beneficial intestinal microflora, as well as providing immunity against intestinal disorders and in protecting cell membranes from oxidative damage. The role of tea is well established in normalizing blood pressure and lipid-depressing activity, prevention of coronary heart disease and diabetes by reducing blood glucose activity. Tea also possesses germicidal and germostatic activities against various germ-positive and gram-negative human pathogen bacteria. So and it's delicious and good for you. So you can check out milk thistle organic tea, organic alfalfa tea, organic black cohosh tea, all available from Select Tea, available online, organic blueberry leaf tea and catnip tea, and check it out. You will find one that interests you, since there are so many from Select Tea. That's S-E-E-L-E-C-T. Charlotte, do you hear me now?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. We're speaking up the wonders of technology, and we don't really have to yell, but now we can still hear each other. And so I wanted to know what the connection of veganism and yoga is for you. You're a yoga instructor, creator of Earth Energy Yoga. And by the way, what's your website? I don't think we've gotten that out there yet today.
Thank you so much. It's charlottecressy.com. And I also want to mention we are hosting an ecofeminist conference this summer, July 24th through 26th in the beautiful Orange County, California at the Goddess Temple. And so you can learn more about that on my website. But anyway, so I'm sorry, what was your question?
Yeah, so the connection between veganism and yoga, what's...
Yeah, okay. Well, like I was saying before, I want to find ways to help people create a better world and help people access their wisdom, because I think that kindness toward animals is innate to every cell of our being. Kindness to ourselves, kindness to others, it's really a part of who we are. Like, it's in the design of our bodies as humans, but we're conditioned to be disconnected from that, to operate from a place of what I call disembodied logic, where we're stuck in our minds and we're using ideas and rationalizations and logic to explain away our feelings and the impulses, the sensations we have in our body. And so all of those behaviors, the disembodied logic, that all the violence inflicted on animals and other people, it all comes from a disconnection with the body. So yoga, to me, is a part of the vegan movement, not just yoga, but any practice that gets you in touch with your body and gets you in touch with your inner wisdom, I think is really essential in the vegan movement. So, for me personally, I've experienced yoga as incredibly empowering, liberating. As a woman, I was trained to see my body as an object and to objectify myself, to criticize myself. And so yoga has really helped me fall in love with who I am. And that's really the goal of life, I think, is to fall in love with others, with the world. Be, I call myself a lover of life because I truly love life, and I think life is meant to be enjoyed, life is meant to be loved, and Earth Energy Yoga, the type of yoga that I've created, is specifically designed to help people reclaim their love for themselves and help them reconnect with their inner wisdom. And in Earth Energy Yoga, we connect with the energies of nature, the elements and the elements of the earth, as well as the lessons that nature and animals have to teach us. So for me, Earth Energy Yoga is, it's both something to empower people as individuals and help them create personal transformation in their own lives, whether they're struggling with addiction or self-confidence issues, or if they just want to feel better in general, maybe they have like some back pain. You know, there's so many benefits to yoga, and that's both on a personal and a planetary level. So for me, Earth Energy Yoga is not just, of course, I'm interested in helping individuals feel their best, but it's really a part of a larger mission of creating a better world for all beings. So it's really empowering people to feel their best and operate at their optimum, because when we're really in touch with that embodied love, when we're really on fire with our, you know, with that connection to our hearts, we naturally treat others with kindness. So how is yoga and veganism connected? Well, yoga has to do with, yoga means union. And so seeing the union, seeing the unity of all of life necessitates, I mean, that very idea, that's what veganism is all about, is breaking down those barriers where you look at another being and you think of them as different or other than you. Veganism is about being yourself in others and being able to put yourself in someone else's, we might say someone else's hooves or whatever you want to call it.
Charlotte, we need to take another break. We'll have a few more minutes together. We're talking to Charlotte Cressy. It's Charlotte, CRESSEY.com. We'll continue our discussion with Charlotte after the break on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and two Bob Linden pages on Facebook. We're talking to Charlotte Cressy today. We have a few more minutes left, and she was a speaker at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, eco-feminist yoga teacher. And Charlotte, my understanding of yoga is that the first precept of yoga is ahimsa, not do harm or hurt anyone or engage in violence. And yet so many yoga practitioners and even those who are famous spiritual leaders in the world aren't vegan. How can we explain this phenomenon?
Well, I think we can explain it in that it's very convenient for people to overlook the things that are that they don't want to change, right? Humans naturally resist change. So I think that there's this tendency to choose what spiritual practices, well, we might say we subscribe to certain beliefs, but then not actually carry them out to their full to their fullest expression. So, yeah, we see this a lot in the yoga world, just like in the rest of the world. The idea that, oh well, you know, there's a way to use animals that's correct, and you can, you know, pray for your animal. And I've heard this many times. I know you and I were talking about this yesterday. A lot of people will say, well, I did a blessing, and I thanked the animal for making a sacrifice for me. But the animal did, that's totally bogus. The animal obviously did not need to be killed. There was no type of contract in which you can just say, oh, well, thank you for dying for me. It's like killing someone and then saying, oh, thank you, I appreciate the sacrifice. There was no agreement. There was no sacrifice.
And that people say, oh, ahimsa to me is being good to myself. So if being good to myself is having someone kill an animal for me to eat, right? That's another another rationalization, like humane meat. It's like inhumane ahimsa.
Right, and I've seen this in Yoga Journal, where they talk about there's this whole new idea about, well, I listen to my body, and some people need meat and other people don't, and the blood type diet and paleo and all these things. And there's this idea that, excuse me, that some people need to eat animal products. And so it's actually an act of self-love and compassion and ahimsa toward oneself to decide, you know what, I just have to drink this milk, or I just have to eat these eggs, I just can't be vegan, or I'm going to eat the fish or whatever animal product it is. And then they'll say, well, this is really an act of ahimsa, it's self-love. But it's not. Ahimsa is, from the yamas of yoga, and the yamas have to do with social conduct. They're not talking about they're not talking about how you treat yourself. This has to do with how we interact with our larger world. And Sharon Gannon has some great ideas on this from her book, Yoga and Vegetarianism. And, ahimsa is the basis for how we should live our lives, do our best to treat others with compassion. And like we were talking about before, it's really to our own benefit. When we treat others how we want to be treated, we thrive too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you've been vegan for how long yourself now?
Since I was 13. I'm 31 now, so I guess, I don't know, you do the math. It depends on what month. I guess it was this summer. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's great. At 13. Yeah. So how did you manage that at 13? That's most kids aren't allowed to decide on their own menus at that age.
Right. Well, it's a longer story. I know we don't have a lot of time, but to simplify it, because I'd love to tell you the full complexity sometime. When I was 3 years old, my best friend was my dog, and my parents served me some kind of flesh, and I said, did a cow have to die for me to eat this? And they were like, yes, honey. And I was like, I'm not eating that anymore. And I pushed it away and was just absolutely horrified and disgusted that my parents were feeding me dead animals. And it didn't make sense to me because they taught me to treat Whimsy, our dog, like, you know, a member of the family. And then here they are serving the other animals. So it didn't measure up for me. And so I wanted to be basically vegan. I didn't know what vegan was, but I didn't want to hurt animals ever since I was born. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone does.
Right.
But unfortunately, my parents, my pediatrician, didn't know anything about nutrition. And they basically said, you have to keep eating, eating chickens and turkeys. And so I did until I was 7.
Well, Charlotte, hold on 1 second. We'll have another minute or two on the other side of the break just for you to finish the story. So we'll continue on Go Vegan Radio. It is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. Charlotte, we have maybe 60 seconds left. I didn't want to cut you off, and you were at going to age 7 there. We're talking to Charlotte Cressy, who was one of the illustrious speakers at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And at age 3, you pushed away a plate of so-called food and said, I don't want to eat this if cows have to die for me to be eating. And then take us to age 7, where you were before the break, and age 13.
Yeah, so when I was 7, I realized that I could assert myself and that my parents were not the authority over me, and I decided that I was no longer going to eat the flesh of animals, no matter what they said. And so I became a vegetarian. This was in the Midwest. I didn't know anyone really who was vegetarian, but I started reading and educating myself, and because of that, I read a lot about the egg and dairy industries, and I decided I wanted to be a vegan, and it was in the back of my mind for a few years. I stopped buying leather and gradually wanted to be a vegan, and then we were in Kenya, and I saw a goat slaughtered as part of with the Samburu tribe, part of getting to know their culture, and seeing that goat be killed, I just felt like, oh my gosh, I have to do something for the animals of the world. And so the first step was, of course, to go vegan. And so I made that decision right then and there.
And that was at age 13.
At 13, and being vegan is just the first step. I think taking that act of eating in a nonviolent way is the first step, but then figuring out, well, what are the larger issues? What is causing people to eat and use and abuse animals? And what can I do about it? That is definitely part of the journey for all of us.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I think at age 13, I was still learning to tie my shoes. Wasn't quite bright enough to catch on, but okay. Thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you. You're so flattering.
Thank you for being with us today, Charlotte. And you can visit Charlotte's website. It's charlottecressey.com, Charlotte, CRESSEY.com. Thanks for being with us today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden.
Thanks, Bob. It's a delight to chat with you. Take care.
Okay, thanks. And now it is time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school at Rutgers University. And he and Anna Charlton have a book out called Eat Like You Care, and it's selling well. And as a result, people are eating like they care, which means they're going vegan. And welcome today, Professor Francione. Professor Charlton, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Bob. How are you?
Doing great. So,
Bob, I'll tell you, earlier today, I was at an event from the International Jane Stein, which is an organization based in New Jersey, but they have members all over, and they were having a celebration today. And they invited me to come. Actually, the two keynote speakers were myself and Michael Tobias. And we had a very interesting event, but my focus was on, this will surprise you, Bob, my focus was on veganism. and on the fact that...
We're so predictable. This is terrible. We're so predictable.
And so, actually, they asked me before I came, what is it that you're going to speak about? And I said, what do you think I'm going to speak about? I made the point that, the Jains are a spiritual tradition devoted to nonviolence, and they're lovely people, but yet they continue to consume dairy. And I explained that that was really, really made no sense. And it was very interesting because they had made a lunch that was largely vegan, although there was some yogurt on the table, and I think one of the dishes had ghee, although I don't remember. But in any event, I had a dozen people come up to me because my talk was before lunch, and I had at least a dozen people come up to me and say, "I have not had any of the raita, which is the yogurt, and I'm going to give it all up." You make perfect sense about it. And you know, Bob, it always fits. It's not controversial. It's not extreme. It's not radical. It makes common sense. And I think we got a number of people who had a number of converts today to the path of nonviolence and who are going vegan. So I was very happy about that.
That's great. I spoke at the Jain Temple in Northern California some years back at the same time that you did, and I spoke about veganism too. And again, how, you know, the foundation of Jainism is compassion. How can you consume dairy? And I run into so many Jains who, like, they're so proud of their children. My children are all vegan, but I'm not. You know what I mean? It's like, but they're proud of it. They're into it. I don't know. It's like this addiction that we really need to overcome.
Well, you know, I made the point to some of the folks today. I said most of my time is spent talking to Western people who are meat eaters. And I said, you people are 95% there. If it wasn't for the ghee and it wasn't for the yogurt, and they don't eat eggs, but they will eat baked goods that have eggs in them. Some will. And I said, it just doesn't make any sense to draw the line there. And everybody seems to, so many people said it makes perfect sense. And I said, okay, fine. Then stop eating dairy, stop buying wool, stop buying leather. Go vegan. It is the nonviolent way to live. And so it was interesting. I really enjoyed it. I love the Jain community because, unlike going to an animal welfare conference, when you talk to them about veganism, they are receptive. Even if they don't agree with you, they're not rude. Whereas you go to an animal welfare conference, you go to AR20X, whatever the iteration is of the vegan conference, animal rights conference, rather, and you talk about veganism as a moral baseline, people get upset with you. they get angry. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. But we thought tonight we would talk about something that we get a lot of. You could write to me through the website, abolitionistapproach.com, and through Facebook, you can send me messages. But one of the things that we get a lot of is the question, what's your position on having a non-vegan partner? Well, for me, it's an abstract proposition, because Anna is the only person, Bob, who is as devoted to veganism as I am and you are, is Anna. And and so I'm lucky, because I don't have to face that issue. But we thought we would just sort of talk a little bit tonight about that problem, because so many people, face the problem. And there are a lot of folks out there who say, well, you know, if you have a partner who's not vegan, then that's their choice, and you shouldn't really try to impose it on them. Anyway, Anna, why don't you start off with some thoughts on this?
Well, it is interesting that that's one of the most common questions that we get, and it's clear that people are going through...
Hey, we're having dogs here. We have six dogs in the room, and they're playing with each other and getting a little animated. But in any event, so Anna, go ahead, please.
The gang problem there. Okay. It's clear that people get very emotionally distressed, both with an element of disappointment that their partner is not vegan, but also because of the tension that can arise in the household if you've got one person who's really not respectful of the other person's veganism, I suppose is the right word. So my view is usually, when I'm talking to people about that, is that I would require the same level of respect for my views on the question of veganism as I would any other sincerely held moral belief. So I don't find it amusing when I hear these stories of sort of baiting and bantering going on, and clearly people who have that tension in their relationship don't find it amusing. So it seems that relationships, obviously, on every level should be based on respect, and I think it's perfectly okay to require respect on this, even if you haven't got your partner of the same view yet.
I mean, I think it's important to educate. You know, look, we live in a culture in which 95 or 98% or whatever, 97% of people consume animal products. So it's not unexpected that you're going to start a relationship with someone, the chance that that person's going to be a vegan are pretty small. But, and I do think it's important to educate people. If you have, you know, if you like someone, if you're in a relationship, you have to educate that person about this, because they're probably not familiar with the arguments in favor of veganism, and they may even think that veganism is odd or whatever. And it's your, clearly you have to educate them and explain that being a vegan is really what's extreme. However, I do think at some point in time, you have to make a decision. I mean, think about it in terms of any other moral issue that you hold, you know, to be fundamental. I mean, just take it out of the animal. I mean, I always encourage people to sort of, whenever they're facing a dilemma involving animals, think about how you feel about the situation if it were not animals. So move outside the situation and imagine you're having a relationship with somebody who is an anti-Semite, or who is a racist, or whom you find has got child pornography magazines, or something like that. I'm trying to choose things which I think most people would find morally odious. Well, you know, would you be able to have a relationship with someone who was a member of the Nazi Party, or somebody who was a vile racist and you know really harbored animosity towards people of color, or somebody who had sexual fantasies about children, so I think you have to ask yourself, how would you feel about a relationship with a person of that sort? And if the answer is, well, I could never I could never have such a relationship because I would find that to be morally objectionable and unacceptable. Then the question becomes, well, if you take animal interests seriously and you regard animals as, you know, if you regard the animal question as involving fundamental questions of morality the same way you regard these other issues.
Yes, I hear the divorce rate among vegans going up just as we speak now. It's just skyrocketing. We have to take a break. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione and Professor Anna Charlton on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com on Facebook. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. If you're in the Bay Area, Northern California, you have one of the best 100% vegan restaurants around. It's Vegetarian House at 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. That's right, 100% vegan, organic, many raw options, and Vegetarian House caters, so get in touch with Vegetarian House, vegetarianhouse.us, social event, business event, a wedding, Vegetarian House caters, great desserts, go enjoy the sorbet. Instead of wasting your time on Farm's new campaign to get Ben & Jerry's to carry a vegan line of ice cream, go enjoy the vegan ice cream, the sorbet, at Vegetarian House. Check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. We continue on Divorce Court with Gary Francione and Anna Charlton, talking about the mixed couples, vegan and non-vegan. And I know some of them, and I know the tension and the stress, and how the husband goes and sneaks out and has fish tacos and hides in the car, and the wrappers are discovered in the car, and, you know, just everything. Oh, it's a mess, you know, what people go through.
I think the music cut Gary off before he was going to clarify a little bit. Obviously, we're not saying that that you may be saying are psychologically the same as white supremacists or anything like that.
Well, no, that's absolutely right. Which is why, if someone announces that they're a Nazi, you get out of that really quickly. You don't try to educate them because it's not likely to work because they're nuts. But if we're talking, I mean, that's why I think it's important. If there, you know, if you're in a relationship with someone who's not a vegan, you've got to take the time to explain to them and educate them about the realities of animal exploitation and the necessity of veganism. And I encourage that. I really think that, you know, but at some point, you know, and it's going to be different for different people, but at some point, you know, you're going to, if you come to the point where the other person says, look, this is just not my issue, and I don't really care about it. You know, this is just not something that I have any moral concern about. Then I think, then I think you're in a position that is similar to someone who is knowingly taking a morally odious position and doesn't care about the issue of animal exploitation. And I think at that point, you know, you've got to make a decision about what you should do. And it would be hard for me to, you know, unless you're going to be an overt speciesist about it, why would it be any different from finding out that somebody is a neo-Nazi or, you know, a member of the Ku Klux Klan or something like that? You know, at some point in time, someone makes clear, morality, when it comes to non-human animals, doesn't matter to me. Just as for the neo-Nazi and the racist, morality in certain, you know, morality just doesn't matter when it comes to certain issues of human rights. So, you know, I mean, so I think it's a tough issue. And you know, Bob and I, we have friends who are in that sort of position as well. And, you know, I mean, it's very difficult, but I don't really see, if we take this issue seriously, and we aren't being speciesist about it. I mean, one of the things that drives me crazy about the modern animal movement is it is speciesist. It doesn't take animal issues seriously, and it doesn't treat them the way it would fundamental violations of human rights. It doesn't treat those issues similarly, and I think that that is problematic. But so I think that we have to try to see animal exploitation as an issue that is equal to the other issues that we deal with in terms of the gravity. Don't you agree, Bob?
I do agree, and I think it's great when we, you know, insert here, like, what if it were happening to, you know, an Iraqi child, or, you know, like, you know, just to say, would we put up with this in the case of human exploitation, and, you know, why would we then with animal exploitation?
Exactly. I mean, you know, and I do think, you know, and as Anna points out, there are clear psychological differences between somebody who says, I happen to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan, or I'm a member of the neo-Nazi party or something, and somebody who says, I'm not a vegan. Well, obviously, there's a psychological difference in the same way that there's a psychological difference between somebody who just unthinkingly goes to the store and buys animal products and eats them, and somebody who goes and hunts. There's a psychological difference, because the latter is somebody who enjoys.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we are out of time once again, and we'll have to pick up with our discussion next week. Your law practice will include divorces now. not only do we have our vegan food delivery service, but divorce on the spot. Thanks, Gary and Anna. Thanks for listening.